Welcome to the Surviving Grief Podcast, hosted by our grief ministry leaders at Crossroads Church. We'll be sitting down with friends as they share their powerful stories of loss and healing, and we'll hear from grief professionals and other wise people with useful tools for our own time of grief. If you're supporting someone who's grieving, you'll learn how to comfort them and walk with them on their own path to healing. Let's join the conversation.
Welcome back to another episode of Surviving Grief. I'm your host for this teaching episode, Mike Gelfgott. And for today's episode, this is for the friends and the spouses and the coworkers and the neighbors supporting someone who is grieving, those all too important support people. And I actually think that this is one of our more important episodes because grief is a life path that should never be traveled alone. And so for you as the supporter, we're not here to fix them, right? The person who's grieving is not broken. They're grieving. They're in grief. And so this episode is specifically geared towards the support person who is brand new to grief, right? You've never lost someone close to you. You know that you want to be in a supportive role, but you just don't really know what that looks like. What should you say? What should you not say? Sometimes you think that you make things worse, and so you stay away. And so whether you found this on your own or the person who's in grief sent it to you, we are glad that you're here. So you know that your neighbor or your friend or your spouse is in pain. You see the upheaval and the despair that permeates their lives, and you just want to help. You don't know what that looks like. You want to better understand, where do I go? What do I say from here, right? So whether this is in the first day or two after someone lost one, whether this is years down the road and you know it's a loss that's still weighing on them, these are steps and tools to help be a resource to you. If that interests you, you are at the right episode, my friend. So while we're going to cover the hallmarks of support, if you take nothing else away from this episode, it's this. You don't have to have the perfect word or gift, right? You don't have to mow their lawn enough times, but your physical presence is more important than your words. Again, your physical presence is going to be more important than your words. Your presence with the grieving person creates an opportunity for God to work through you. The great news is God uses people who are not perfect, right? That's all of us. You get to be the hands and feet. Supporting a grieving loved one is a sacred privilege that allows us to embody Christ's love and compassion. By offering our presence, listening with empathy, right? We're going to talk about that's a big one, listening with empathy and providing practical support, we can help ease the burden of grief and journey alongside them towards healing and hope. Because ultimately, that's where we want to help them get to, right? A place of living life to the fullest again. So we're going to listen more. We're going to talk less. We're going to love more. We're going to do less. So a little bit about my background. Again, my name is Megs. I've been one of the leaders here at Crossroads, leading the grief groups for about 6 years. My background is in brain health and leading workshops on grief and those experiencing traumatic loss or secondary grief, such as law enforcement, first responders. And this has allowed me to work with hundreds of people over the years. But my personal loss story is one of an older sister who had passed away in a car accident. Her name was Susanna. She was 37 years old when she died unexpectedly, and she left behind a 4-year-old daughter at the time. Later, I would suffer a second trimester miscarriage. And so in both of those respective losses, what sticks out to me the most when I think back to some of my darkest times are the people who came alongside me who had the most impact. And those people were not the ones who had lost stories that mirrored my own. They simply had a willingness to show up, to listen, to support. And even as time marched on, which that's the hard thing, right? Is that this is not an overnight fix. This is not an overnight support where you just gotta, you know, say the right thing one time. But this is months and sometimes years for people. But it was the people who came alongside me that I just felt like they ministered to me in a way that nothing else could. And so, you know, for me, God really showed up not only through his presence, but also just the people that he brought alongside me. So before we get into like the actual tools and support pieces, I just want to take a minute to applaud your efforts to grow in your knowledge and understanding on how to better support the person in your life. Grief controls and changes someone in vastly different ways. that mild-mannered person, right, that you work with might suddenly be angry or short-tempered, or always, you know, the social going out person who's always happy. They may not be that person now. They may be really hard and difficult and trying to be around. They might not have that interest to leave the house. So however grief presents itself to our loved ones, I just want to applaud the efforts that you're trying to meet them in that hard place. Because when I think back to when I was grieving and my really hard chapters, I was less than delightful to be around. It was really, really hard. And so for you as the support person, you know, thank you for trying to find ways to reach them, to minister to them, to comfort them. So today, we're going to really cover three big pieces to help you support that person in your life. The first is going to be the marks of grief. Give you a better understanding of what is grief. Ostensibly, we know what it is, but taking a deeper look at what are the physical symptoms, like how does it actually show up? I know for me, I was really naive as to what grief looked like when it was playing out in my life. The second is this piece of walking in fortitude. So this is the action piece for us. It's your physical presence and showing up for someone. It's listening, it's supporting. And again, support is an action, which we'll talk more about. And then prayer. That's such an important part of this fortitude piece. And then lastly, a map of hope. How do we respect their process? Because grief and that journey is going to be unique to every single person. And then what are our words of comfort like? And then continued care. So marks of grief, walk of fortitude, and then the map of hope. So let's jump right in. The marks of grief. If you haven't checked out our Grief 101 episode, I would really encourage you to listen, where we go a lot more in depth on giving you the snapshot of what does grief look like. But just for our purposes, I want you to think about grief not only in the layers of, yes, something that they loved, someone that they loved is no longer with us, but it's also the loss of an identity. What are the unique worries tied to the loss type? Let's take widows, for example. You know, a lot of times when we sit down with women who, let's say, are later in life, who are suddenly a widow, they've never done the bills, let's say, or their identity of being one thing now has to change. Their roof is leaking. I don't even know who to call for that. And so when you think of each loss type or the person that you're supporting, what are some of the unique worries that could be tied to that? For some people, it's, you know, they have Mother's Day coming up, except they don't have a child with them anymore. They have Valentine's Day coming up. They don't have a spouse or a girlfriend anymore. And so these are some of the unique challenges that come up when you think about the identity layers associated with loss. Now, let's talk about the physical symptoms. So initially, after the death of my sister, I had about a 6-week grief bubble where I felt like I was experiencing grief, right? I was really sad, but I was focused on just moving. I had logistics, I had, you know, people to take care of, people to check in on, and it was a lot of organizing meals that were coming, text messages, things like that. And yet, as time settled on, I just figured that grief period was over and that life was different and it just moved on. But it was about a year later when I looked at the landscape of my life and I just had an undercurrent of anger to everything that was happening. My relationships were really strained. I had foggy brain. I had memory issues. I definitely had a physical fatigue. But for me, I didn't associate any of that with grief. Some people do a really good job of running towards their pain. They're listening to podcasts, they're reading books, they're doing all of these things. I was not that person. It was really exploring what did grief look like. And so that's why I was really shocked to find out the lists and lists of all the ways that grief appears in our lives. And so again, that Grief 101 episode, we go a lot more in depth on what it actually looks like. But just to name a few, there's the obvious ones. There's despair and there's anger and there's hopelessness, but there's also the fatigue piece. And that fatigue is not just, oh, I'm so tired. For some people, they're sleeping, you know, 15, 16 hours a day, or they just never feel like they get a restorative night's sleep. Even things like when they're working, because many people can't just stop working, right, in the midst of their grief. When they're at work, someone will say something to them and then it immediately leaves their mind. They can't remember names. They can't remember what they did earlier. And so there's all of these things that start to take a toll on our body physically as well. And then also, when you take a look at what the emotional symptoms look like, someone who has been very secure in their life, let's say they're a very confident person, maybe suddenly they're struggling with anxiety or they're struggling with depression and they just don't know how to deal with it. And so they continue to be withdrawn. And so for you as a support person, the more that you can understand what some of these symptoms look like, you know, knowledge is really power in this. When I first went through the Crossroads Grief Group, again, it was about a year after I lost my sister. I think it was in the first or the second week when we went through this Grief 101 of this pages. I mean, it had to have been at least three or four pages of just lists of all of the symptoms of grief. And I remember checking things off and circling things of, okay, I have this, I have this, I have this. And I had no idea that they were connected. And so for me, it was such a light bulb moment that I went home and I brought that book to my husband because I could point to things and say, oh my gosh, this is me. And so what we have to keep a frame of reference on, a lot of times when people are in those early stages of grief, and when I say early stages, I mean under 6 months, they don't know which end is up. And for support people, oftentimes well-meaning, we're coming to that person who's already depleted emotionally and physically and saying, hey, just tell me what you need. Would love to help. Tell me what you need. And what we forget is two things. One, they don't know. They don't know what they need. Or two, they just don't have the bandwidth to sort through what they need. And so when you look at that person as being a little bit underwater, right? Like they're just trying to stay afloat, coming alongside them and saying, yep, you let me know what you need. That can be a really hard place. And for them, a lot of times, just not very helpful. And so as a result, the person who is grieving, they just become more and more withdrawn. And so those early, early days of grief, when pain feels like it is at a pinnacle, that's when you see support people really get lost in this, like, do I read them a Bible verse? Do I sit with them? Should I show up? But I called. And so that's some of the biggest questions that I get is, in those early stages, when they are in these hard places of grief, what does that look like? And so, of course, we're not encouraging you to skirt past boundaries if someone's like, please don't come over. This is not, I don't want you to hear me saying come over anyways. But I, you know, there's so much power in just checking on someone. And so whether that's a text message that you preface with, hey, don't feel like you need to respond to this, but I just want to let you know that I'm thinking of you. You know, those kinds of check-ins, in previous episodes, I've talked about that in the swirl, when support is at its highest, right? It was really close, either just before the funeral or just after. I was back home in Arizona, and I just remember getting what felt like 100 phone calls in a day and just all of these voicemails. And there was one particular voicemail I got that started with, no pressure to call me back. I just want to let you know that I am praying for you and your family. And I know that you have all the support you need right now, but I want to let you know that I'm going to continue to pray for you and your niece and your parents and your sister. And in the moment when I was getting a flood of all of these voicemails, gosh, that was just like such a balm to my soul. Because one, I felt really grateful that someone was taking the time to pray for me and my family in this situation. And then two, I didn't have the pressure to call them back. When so many people want something from you, tell me when to, you know, where do you want this meal train? Where do you want this casserole? This was someone who did not need anything from me. They were just giving and they were just encouraging and speaking life. And so when we think of this initial phase around the marks of grief, for us as the support people, really trying to be sensitive to what are some of these symptoms and how are they showing up? If this is a coworker who's really struggling, how are there ways that maybe you can take something off their plate, right? Or maybe leave an encouraging note on their desk, something like that. It doesn't have to be these grand gestures, but just small ways that we're continuing to support. So the second piece, this walk of fortitude, I think is kind of the crux to these three pillars. So fortitude, courage in pain or adversity. And so, of course, that would apply to someone who's actually actively going through grief. But for you as a support person, what does that look like? Well, your physical presence, which means it's going to require your time. Listening, every grieving person, they need a place to share their thoughts and their memories and their concerns, even if their default is, nope, don't want to talk about it. I'm fine. Eventually, these things will bubble up. It may not be that first week or that first month, but having someone safe that they can share some of these really hard things with, gosh, that's so important. Fortitude looks like the action piece of support and care. Does your neighbor need help mowing their grass? Does your neighbor need help, you know, with something around the house? Let's say that it's a widow. They're not accustomed to fixing a door that suddenly broke. You know, like just small things like that. If it's a coworker, how can you help step in from an action piece and take something off their plate? And then, of course, the thing that ties it all together is prayer. Maybe the person that you are supporting, maybe they don't currently have a faith, and it's you diligently covering them in their healing in prayer. See, God builds bridges. God heals hearts. God brings more people to help carry the load of support. So we personally can't fix the pain that we're in, but we can put ourselves in a position to anticipate needs and then ultimately show our care. Walking in fortitude is filled with actions. You know, so many times, well-meaning people, when they ask again and again, well, just tell me what you need. A lot of times that takes on its own burden, again, because they don't know what they need. As a support person, we want you to be in it for the long haul. I had so many people that dropped off as the months kind of marched forward for a combination of reasons. And I feel like the big two were, one, they just didn't know how to be around me because I was different in the face of grief. And admittedly, I was not easy to be around. I was short-tempered. I remember just being frustrated a lot. And then the other piece is, you know, people who were friends would ask me to go out or to go do things, and it was always a no. And I was kind of retreating back into that place of isolation because grief isolates people. And so I had a handful of people who really made an effort to just continue to check in. And that's the thing, you know, every single person, their grief journey is going to look unique. And yet there's so many similarities from person to person of the evolution of grief. So in this walk of fortitude, the hours after the news break or a year plus, it's in that place that our listening and our action can really minister to someone. There's this really couple of great quotes that I love from C.S. Lewis, who we've talked about on the podcast before from A Grief Observed. And so when he's talking about those early stages of grief, he says, "For in grief, nothing stays put." And I just love that, right? Because it kind of gives you this image of just a windstorm coming through. You know, think of an office and just nothing is safe. Things are breaking. Things are moving all over the place. And he goes on to say, "One keeps on emerging from a phase, but it always reoccurs. Round and round, everything repeats. Am I going in circles, or dare I hope I am on a spiral? And if a spiral, am I going up or down? How often will it be for always? How often will the vast emptiness astonish me like a complete novelty and make me say, I never realized my loss till this moment? The same leg is cut off time after time." And I think what C.S. Lewis really captures here is that this feeling of grief, I mean, he equates it to being mildly drunk or concussed. There's just so many things that are, there's an upheaval of chaos around us. And so for you as a support person, you coming in without agenda and just being willing to listen to all of the chaos and all of the upheaval and just, you know, sit and be in it with them. Gosh, that's so settling in a world that feels maybe a little out of control for them as well. And so when we offer to listen to the person who's in grief, whether they're volunteering to share or not, but just being there with them, it's this idea of listening with compassion, listening without judgment, and with genuine compassion is an invaluable for someone who is grieving. So we're going to allow them to express their thoughts and their feelings and their memories without interruption, right? So we're not necessarily giving our take on it, which I think is a really natural response of, as someone shares something hard, you're trying to either match it or maybe share your own story, but giving them space to just talk. You know, something that we cover in Grief 101 is, however complicated their relationship is with the person that they lost, that will translate to their grieving process. right? So if there were things that left unsaid, if there was a relational break that never healed, just complicated things like that, if it was a traumatic or a violent passing, these are all things that will play out in the grief journey and how it evolves. And so for you, from a listening standpoint, it's just kind of giving them space to talk. My sister had, she'd struggled with addiction for many years. At the time that she'd passed away, she was 4 years sober. But I remember as I really started processing my grief, I suddenly had a lot of things bubble up around her addiction. And so while that had been years earlier, I just needed to talk about it. I needed to talk about those hard things of, you know, we went through all of this stuff with your addiction and we finally got to a place of sobriety. This isn't fair. And so I can remember sharing that with friends of this idea of things weren't fair. When you listen to someone empathetically and without judgment, and you really allow them to process out loud, gosh, it's like a physical weight can be lifted. In James 1:19, he reminds us, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. So we're going to allow them to express all of those thoughts and all of the complicated things that can bubble up. And so the best that we can do sometimes is simply listen and then pray for the person after they've shared their heart and their hurt. So if you are someone who is not comfortable with praying, right? Maybe this all feels very foreign and very new to you. Again, God uses our imperfections and our shortcomings in really beautiful ways. You don't have to have this, you know, wildly robust faith. Even if it's new and it's small, just the fact that you're showing up for your friend or your spouse or your coworker and you're willing to pray for them, gosh, there's so much power in whatever maybe inadequacies you might feel. Just have confidence that God will bolster you as you pray for that person. And again, you don't have to have the perfect words, but we're just really trying to cover them and their healing and their circumstance in prayer, and he's going to show up for us. And so that brings us to our last piece, this map of hope, because we don't want them to stay in this really dark, painful place. Grief doesn't have an expiration date, but it can also be fatiguing for the support person if this is months or years and they still seem like they're in that day one. And so it's okay to have personal boundaries as well, right? We're not asking you to just be in the trenches 24/7. And so it's really evaluating, how do I continue to love them? How do I still continue to offer support and care and space for them to share? And so that really looks like, how do you check in on your loved one? What does that offering of support continue to look like? What is that companionship as they navigate through different stages of grief? And that can look like their year of firsts. So that's the first holidays, the first birthdays, things like that. And maybe it's checking in with them beforehand. Hey, I know we have that anniversary going on, right? Like, let's say it's the anniversary of the passing. Would you like to do a memorial? Would you like to go to the gravesite or maybe write a message on a balloon and release it? You know, there's so many, if you were to Google them, there's so many great different ideas that people have for those initial 1 year memorials. But even things like holidays, you know, some people like to keep things exactly the same. Others are like, everything needs to be different. I can't have it the same. And so we don't want to go into really evaluating someone's grief journey with expectation, but really respecting the process of where they're at, because it's going to look different from person to person. And again, we're not here to fix it, right? We're just here to encourage and love them through it. There's this verse that I love, Hebrews 10:24-25, where he encourages us, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another. And friends, let me tell you, I know sometimes there is fatigue involved when you are supporting someone in grief. I get it. I've been the supporter. I've been the receiver. I've been on both sides of the fence. And it's not an easy job. And that's why so many people drop off, right? It's been a month and they're like, oh gosh, are they still sad? You know, I mean, like, hopefully not quite like that, but there's a weight to getting in there, but there's also a privilege that comes to it, because you can alter the course of someone's healing if you are willing to meet them in that hard place. And gosh, I just think that God shows up in such unbelievable ways when people are at their lowest. And so, again, this is just meant to be a resource to really encourage you that, one, you're doing something amazing by willing to be there for them. And then two, your presence, your listening, your support and your prayer, those all come together to really help someone feel loved and supported and encouraged in those really, really hard days. So I hope this was helpful for you. I would encourage you to check out some of our other episodes, especially the Grief 101. And of course, email us any of your questions. Thanks.
Surviving Grief is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. If you'd like to connect or share your own story, reach out to us at podcasts@crossroads.net. That's podcasts with an S at crossroads.net. We'll see you next time.